top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Our guys in size here took about 50 kilos of heroin.
Someone's having a party tonight.
In the city's most corrupt precinct.
He used to work for internal affairs. How'd you know who you could trust?
Two honest men are about to bring justice to the law.
I want to catch all these guys at once. Stick it to them.
No sunshine in this home. Only dark
exit wounds.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 356 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Exit Wounds, Steven Seagal. I'm reminded of that Family Guy where Seth MacFarlane and company make fun of him by saying, Steven Seagal, you know, he acts Italian, he looks vaguely Asian, and his last name is Jewish, so what in the heck are you? It's pretty funny. Exit Wounds, I mean, to the extent he's been featured in Jeff and I's book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, the 100 Wackiest Action Movies, but also, you know, throughout the course of the podcast. And from what we can gather, I mean, this marks a sort of point of demarcation, after which you had Half Past Dead and Submerged. This, I would argue, is probably his last real movie, and it came out in 2001, a big budget, $30 million plus budget. Afterwards, it was sort of all downhill, and the quality of his films are negatively correlated with his increase in weight. But I got to say that this is almost, yeah, a real transitional period, almost like how ex-POTUS Donald Trump represents a kind of tonal shift to sort of vulgarian, obstreperous douchebags in political high office, and also maybe how the Beatles' Revolver album marked a transition from, pop music sensibilities to more psychedelia. But Exit Wounds, this is really the turning point, and this is the time when after which Seagal really hit the buffet table hard by the looks of it, is he still looks relatively normal here and hasn't yet adopted all the hair plugs or girth that subsequently sunk, no pun intended, some of his later efforts. And you still get glimpses of some of the some of his moves, and even though some of them are slowed down. This is an action film that's directed by Andrzej Bartkowiak. He's a Polish director, and interestingly, apparently a friend of Sidney Lumet. It's funny, as I was exchanging emails with a very good friend of mine about tier lists in both comedy and directors, and I completely slipped my mind that Sidney Lumet might be in the A side of things, obviously with his sublime work, Dog Day Afternoon and Network, to name a few. But this guy was, I guess, worked on some of his films, and is a cinematographer, this Andrzej Bartkowiak, and he brings his directorial touch here, not the most deft-handed. I don't know if he took too much from his mentor there, but Exit Wounds is one of these films where you just can't help but noticing just how freaking Canadian it is. This is ostensibly set in Motown, right? This is supposed to be a really rough police precinct in Detroit. And right off the bat, this has to mark speaking of demarcation points, this has to be the first instance in which one of my former employers is actually shown in a movie that I've discussed on a podcast. In this case, I was once a producer and a journalist for the CBC, so Canada's a national broadcaster, and not in within, I think, a minute into this film, there's the exterior of the CBC headquarters and Metro Hall, which is an area near my present place of work, near with all these city services and stuff, and I just thought, oh my God, this is something else. And But what really warmed me to this right off the bat is just two sublime and almost hallmarks of the action film cliche. And this would be the exploding chopper, which is just great, especially when it's small firearms that causes the explosion, which always gets me. It's something just mind-numbing. But and the other one would be the reprimand by the stern superintendent, superior cop type, tells Seagal, "You're trying to start a World War III out here," and the World War III out here is like a shopworn, a hoary bit of verbiage that it's surprising I didn't think of that for our Minds Bigger Than Yours book, but it certainly should feature prominently if we actually decide to do a sequel based on that book. I guess we'll find out depending on how our sales are doing. A quick shout out to the book, but everyone and anyone is in this movie, and this shows like the draw of Steven Seagal still, like hot on the heels of Marked for Death and all the other superb efforts that he'd been a part of in the 90s, and how he was really top of the action game with his career, and it was just in full flight. And then, you know, the wind was really taken out of his sails. I know I'm beating a metaphor to death there, but and you gotta love these dunderheaded plots for these action movies. Like you have an assassination plot to kill not the president of the United States, but the vice president of the United States. Like, honestly, who gives a crap who the vice president is? It's largely ceremonial, and to the extent anyone would ever come to power would be if a president were unable to, due to health reasons or passing away, would be not be able to fulfill their duties. But it just seems like such a ineffectual person to try and take out. Hell, you'd be better off taking out the Speaker of the House or something. It's just so ridiculous. But there's some sort of well-armed, police-tied Michigan militia group that's out there, and of course, who should step to the president, the VP's rescue would be a ne'er-do-well, Serpico style, you know, one of these rogue cops. And the film actually does reference Serpico, which is funny as well. I mean, you just, the shadow of that, the long, long shadow is far greater than the rather short one cast by the very short Al Pacino. But Serpico, I mean, what a movie. It's just so, it's just informed so much of subsequent, rogue, bad apple type cop movies that it really is, should be awarded some kind of prize. You forget how bloody influential it is to this day, even with the likes of Law & Order SVU. But as I said before, this thing is as Canadian as it gets, because not only did it feature my former employer, with an internal scene too, and that really got me as well. There was a shootout not far from the hallway I worked in. My cousin at the time, he was a sports reporter, and he would be covering NHL hockey and soccer and the Olympics, and that his offices were down across the hall from mine. I was in the entertainment, scripted entertainment, I guess you could call it. And it's just so hilarious to see this backdrop that I wandered the halls of, it being the setting of some knucklehead action film. But this movie is really, really Canadian, because not only is it, again, the CBC and our broadcaster and all that, but you also have Jill Hennessy, that fine actress, playing the internal affairs officer, ex-IA officer, who's Steven Seagal's new captain and uber boss. And of course, she's tough as nails and always does things by the book. And Boyd, who's the Steven Seagal character, Orin, what kind of name is that? But he's the one who does, he does things his own way and has to be tightly reined in. Obviously, Jill Hennessy, she's in Law & Order, so it all ties back to this whole, the Canadian aspect of this thing. It was also filmed in Hamilton, and I recognized also because there was Black Summer, which I podcasted recently, shots of Calgary, Alberta. So long story short is none of this could really be taken as anything that would resemble Detroit in any way. I mean, certainly Toronto doesn't, if you've been to either city. And sure as hell Hamilton doesn't, which is, well, maybe more so. That's a sort of a steel town an hour away from here, kind of like Pittsburgh. And most certainly Calgary does not, but that's neither here nor there. Like, the Canadian aspect is also reinforced through this one cop who's Canadian on this force that's a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, and they're having this debate about who the greatest athlete of all time is. One of them opines that it's Muhammad Ali. You could probably make a pretty good case for that. I would probably say Sugar Ray Robinson, maybe, but you can't doubt Ali. Someone else comes up with the obvious Michael Jordan, someone else with the Tiger Woods, but then the Canadian guy, and here he's representing, right? He says the great one, you know, number 99, Wayne Gretzky should be seen in these terms, which is, that was just great too. Like, why not maybe Gordie Howe, who's like a longtime famous Detroit Red Wing player, maybe, since this is ostensibly Detroit, and who was actually Wayne Gretzky's idol and actually named Mr. Hockey. So I don't know, that could have been an obvious tie-in, but I mean, this is a Canadian film. You have a couple of iconic brands as well that they couldn't help but include. One of them is HBC, which is, I think, the longest running company in the world, Hudson's Bay Company. It was founded in the 18th century by our British colonial overseers. So it's a long time a British company. And then there's Tim Hortons, which is a infamous coffee chain in Canada that dots the border towns in the U.S. as well, and is something Canadians are inextricably keen on. Their coffee is kind of subpar and everything, but and then there's references to Pizza, which is this just god-awful pizza chain. I don't know if they have Sbarro's outside of New York City, but it's that kind of just like Domino's level, like barely edible cardboard pie. And that's in here as well. But Exit Wounds is all based around these crooked cops who are running a heroin outfit. No pun intended. They're actually running heroin and using apparel as a cover. So they're dyeing clothing in a kind of liquid form of heroin and then sending it all over the place. And there's bad apples, and there's a drug dealer played by DMX, and he's a Latrell Walker, and DMX has his "Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone," and his sidekick is TK, who's Anthony Anderson, is a star of a pretty good show. Apologies, speaking of helicopters, there's one flying by now, and that's going to be on the mic here. But Anthony Anderson, who really is aging, just unbelievably good. I don't know if I should have saved that for something I've learned, but he's on that really good show called Blackish. And you got him in here, Michael Jai White, the martial artist, and you got all these people in here. Bill Duke from the Schwarzenegger movies, Predator and whatnot. You just always just bring in the business. Bill Duke is always super cool, always elevates everything. And I can't say much for Earl DMX Simmons acting abilities, but he doesn't have to do much except just be sort of scowling and square jaw. So in effect, he's almost like not exactly a counterpoint to Seagal, who's very similar, but you have all these just brutal lines. And my favorite scene, you're going to segue into what we learned here, but Seagal is obviously threatened with desk work, which is the cliche of the cliche for cop procedurals. You're going to be put on a desk. I'm going to give you traffic duty. Two just great scenes. One in which a begloved, white-gloved Steven Seagal, as if he's taking pantyhose off or something. Like, Seagal's directing traffic. I think it's in Calgary or something, but he's directing traffic because he can't get along with anyone. He goes his own way and beats the crap out of people and doesn't do anything by the book. And it's so, so funny. And in another exercise, there's this male bonding ritual amongst these 15th Detroit cop precinct officers, in which one of them is this really alpha dog who, I guess, challenges some of his cop buddies to tase him. And like, don't tase me, bro. And this guy's like got muscles on his muscles. He's just bursting at the seams, swole, as the kids say. And this increasingly starting to get husky, Seagal says, "Oh, I can take it too." And then the guy actually tases Seagal, who twitches like crazy before eventually succumbing and genuflecting on one knee. And surprisingly, given that it's rather rare in the oeuvre, in the body of work that Seagal has, that he actually incurs any damage. And I think it probably speaks to just the giant, massive ego that he's been known to cop. There's a pretty funny article in The Guardian, of all things, about Segal, the author of the piece is basically talking about how Mr. Segal's been Me Too'd, and she says it's not surprising because he just basically surrounds himself with a bevy of beauties and has nothing but eyes for their cleavage and asses and everything. But to quote her article, she says, "After my experience with Segal, I'm not surprised at all by these allegations, but not for the obvious reasons," she says. "It wasn't the 18-hand stroke of his mammoth ego that he himself had arranged, or the way he ogled our breasts like they had suddenly grown lips and started singing to him in chorus. It wasn't even the way he continuously interrupted us mid-questions so he could resume his lengthy disquisition on himself. What raised alarm bells and portended to the insidious danger of the man's behavior was his sanctimony." So yeah, it's like this ridiculous, fatuous, he puts the fat in fatuous, character is always touting the principles of Buddhism and moral conduct and that, but the guy, I mean, he eschews principles of restrictions that are inherent in Buddhism. I mean, obviously the guy's eating himself into an early grave and is, at this point, probably was a good 50 pounds overweight, to say the least. So it's, and not to mention the kind of tenuous, sort of murky background of his martial arts. Like, there's no doubting his Aikido bona fides. So he did go to Japan. He did start a dojo over there, and he's undoubtedly a master practitioner in Aikido. But some of the details that he's really enveloped and created a self-made myth surrounding his dealings in Asia and whatnot. But you can't really fault him for some of these things. I mean, the guy speaks Japanese at a pretty good level from what I can tell and what other punters on YouTube have said. He's also conversant in Russian, and I think he's actually living there and was given some sort of diploma or passport by Vladimir Putin over there. So, I mean, say what you will about his background, but he does kind of ingratiate himself to the local customs and cultures. And yeah, I mean, I really do hope the Me Too stuff is really is not the case, but who knows at this point. Maybe where there's smoke, there's fire. The most of Exit Wounds involves, you know, Segal trying to get to the bottom of this corrupt police force and all these dealings with these shady cops and whatnot, and trying to get in there using intel from this Detroit AM host played by, of all people, Tom Arnold. It reminds me of one of those celebrity roasts. It might have been Greg Giraldo or maybe Jeff Ross, who said, "Tom Arnold, thanks for taking time out from being Roseanne's ex-husband to be here with us." I thought it was hysterically funny, and he's kind of a twitchy, ridiculous character, and so he's in this movie as like a pseudo journalist who for some reason feeds Segal, I don't know, maybe fed him like submarine sandwich or something, but you know, he feeds him a bunch of intel so that he can get closer to the drug dealer Latrell and all this stuff. There's a fight scene that looks like possibly it might have taken place in a strip club that I think is now it has darkened its doors. It's been waylaid by the pandemic, but it's called For Your Eyes Only. It's near it's near Jeff's place, and we used to go there, I think, on a couple of occasions when someone had a bachelor party or something. It's just, I mean, it was sort of made up to be a classy strip joint to the extent that can even be possible. And it looks like this was lensed there, and there's hysterical scenes where this, I mean, increasingly not fleet of foot, Segal is going toe-to-toe with these muscled behemoth bouncers, and of course getting the better of them, and getting I think a bottle of Cristal or something smashed over his dome. But extremely funny, great fight scenes in a lot of cases, and you know, there's briefcases full of money. There's another great scene where this drug dealer saunters into a luxury car dealership, which is actually not that far from my house where I'm podcasting this, but he saunters in and gets dismissed offhand by the black salesperson and really accommodated by the white sales guy, who just flips him keys and says, "No, I'm good." The black sales guy says, "You're probably this, you didn't like the cut of his jib," and says he was thinking he probably couldn't afford fine Italian craftsmanship vehicles like a Lamborghini, which he eventually does roll out in, but such a insane scene where this drug dealer pays in cash with a bag of money and just drives out the front door of this place without even the sales team counting to make sure the funds are all there. Just one of the great, great scenes. I mean, you know, you've got just helicopters, you have people being impaled on a clothes rack, you got fisticuffs galore, you got one-liners, you got zingers, you got the surly guy who runs the evidence storage department at the cop shop, and this is another cliche of police movies. It goes back to Serpico, and again resonates still to this day, where you have the surly guy who's like, oh no, like taking umbrage with the fact he has to go into the evidence room and secure something for the hero, like, oh, like, because he's so busy, you know, reading the newspaper, he's always reading the newspaper and watching sports. I don't know what it is with these evidence department guys and why they're not on the ball and acting like proper librarians and sourcing stuff for our heroes. It would make things move much more swimmingly. It certainly does on Law and Order SVU. Another thing I learned, Eva Mendez is in this thing. Again, you got David Vadim as one of the corrupt detectives, and he's, or Vadim, I guess. He's a Ukrainian actor, and he's just another one of these guys. You sort of know him when you see him, because he's just one of these bit part actors that's seemingly everywhere and typecast all over the place with like Side Streets, New York Undercover, Law and Order, G.I. Jane, Air Force One. He's the same character in every freaking thing. But I just really, really enjoyed this one and marked a turning point. Really the last Seagal film that I enjoyed in any kind of capacity that wasn't ironically. So Exit Wounds is based on the book of the same name by John Westerman. It goes without saying, I haven't read it, but it's set in Long Island, New York, but they decide to decamp and put it in Detroit anyway, because that would be probably a better scene setting than, I don't know, the Hamptons or wherever the hell it would be in Long Island. But this one, I mean, I just enjoyed it so thoroughly. There's just great beatdowns. There's fantastic cartwheels performed by Seagal and leaping over cars that are heading towards him. The locales, and just it's so replete with just things that'll warm your heart as a Torontonian to see. Wonderful stuff from all the brands and the little downtown neighborhoods. There's a remark that will particularly resonate with Torontonians about how Detroit has gone to shit. And then in the background, they show Yonge Street, which is the de facto main street of Toronto, in which, when I was growing up, was just full of strip clubs and CD, like peep show stuff and head shops and punk shops and places where you could just score pipes for all sorts of things, and like rock t-shirts and all this kind of. So I just thought, okay, that was held as an example of urban blight, which I guess when this was filmed still might have been the case, although Yonge Street has undergone a little bit of a transformation since, with some new restaurants and stuff opening. But it still is worthy of a stroll right from top to bottom, if you can, like in terms of the downtown core, if you're ever in Toronto. Isaiah Washington's in this movie as well. Things I've learned. He's a veteran. You'll know him if you see him from Crooklyn, some Spike Lee films. He was in Bullworth. Warren Beatty. It's Halle Berry. Okay, Paul Sorvino. Whatever. He's in here. He's pretty damn good as well. So, I mean, you got like a pretty damn good cast. You got Seagal when he's still able to do his Aikido moves, and he does a lot of kicks too. Final thing I've learned is that they actually put Seagal's character, Oren Boyd, in an anger management class, and his 6 foot whatever five frame is too big for the little tiny teeny tiny elementary school desks, and he breaks it in frustration and to the applause of all his fellow, I guess it might have been court mandated to anger management classes, but it's such a fun scene. And that's where he meets the Tom Arnold morning show journalist type character, so they can work in tandem, which is so ridiculous, but it didn't matter. I mean, ridiculousness is sort of par for the course for action movies, especially in the 90s, and this would have been in the early 2000s. But I think I'm getting the curtain call here, as my property manager is doing some sort of maintenance outside, so I don't know if I can win today, what with the helicopters and all the noise. So I'm going to keep this one short, but it was great to jump into some more Seagal films, because I mean, he was really the king of the 90s, and you can't help but hold a soft spot for him, even if he himself has gotten a little bit soft around the midriff. Anyway, another shout out to our book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, 100 Wackiest Action Movies. You can pick that up at any bookstore in North America, including like a Chapters or one of the chains in the US, and also in the UK, or Amazon if that's easiest. So you'd really be supporting the show if you really enjoy these kinds of action films. And of course, our man Steven is so prominently featured throughout. We just couldn't help ourselves trashing him. Hopefully you continue to enjoy the Really Awful Movies podcast, and we shall talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.